Hi, listeners, and welcome to this footnote episode of the Fantasy Animation Podcast with me, Chris Holliday.
And me, Alex Sargent.
We are still joined by Dr. Robin Muir, lecturer in media and communication at the University of Surrey, to talk about Disney princesses. So this is obviously something that's particularly central to your work. You are the author of The Disney Princess Phenomenon, a feminist analysis. So we thought who better to talk us through the kind of ins and outs of the Disney princess, its sort of evolution, I guess, how people have approached this phenomena, and also to suggest some potential sources for people who want to go off, students who want to go off, who are perhaps writing about Disney, contemporary Disney, thinking about femininity, gender in the Disney, in Disney feature animation. So, Alex, you have the timer to hand. I don't have one with me, but you, yep. I can see that you have a timer. We will put 10 minutes, 10 minutes on the clock. So, the Disney princess, I guess I'm also interested in the fact you've put the Disney princess phenomenon as part of your book title. So maybe that's a good... What do we mean by the Disney princess phenomenon?
Yes, thank you so much. Yeah, so it's deliberate because for a very long time, established ways of approaching Disney princesses has often been from a franchise perspective because that's how they're known. It's the Disney princess franchise. But what's interesting about that is that there are women in the Disney canon who are princesses, yet are not included in this franchise, even though they are literally princesses. And I'm specifically talking about Ilonwy from The Black Cauldron, 1985, Kida from Atlantis, The Lost Empire from 2001, my personal favourite and who I named my dog after, and also the likes of Raya from Raya and the Last Dragon, and to an extent, Moana. Because whilst Moana has kind of been creeping in to Disney princess stuff and is kind of like... she is kind of like represented in them now. She's still not had an official coronation. So the way that I worded it deliberately was phenomenon for one, to include these non-franchise princesses, but two, to really kind of emphasize how massive this brand is. This is beyond just kind of like films. Even merchandise, even consumer experiences, there's an entire fandom. And actually, one of the reasons how the Disney Princess franchise came about was because of fandom. Andy Mooney was in a line at a Disney on Ice show and saw all of these children dressed up in makeshift princess costumes. And it was at that point a light bulb went off in his head and he thought, oh, we should probably do something about this. And that's how the Disney Princess franchise was born. But they've been very selective about the women that are included in that. And often it's some of the more empowered princesses who are not included in that franchise.
Right. When you say franchise, is this a top-down... So this is a top-down, studio-sanctioned set of Disney princesses that are codified as such?
Yes, yeah. So when you go on like the Shop Disney website and you go on Disney princesses, you've got a specific kind of like set of princesses that you can choose from. Snow White, Cinderella, Aurora, Ariel, Belle, Jasmine, Pocahontas, Mulan, Tiana, Rapunzel, Merida. Technically, it stops there.
Right.
After that, Anna and Elsa came, and that's been very interesting because sometimes they kind of like come into princess stuff. So like Ultimate Princess Celebration Week, they kind of like bopped in a little bit there. Sometimes they're kind of like included round and about in the same kind of like locations of the shops. And then other times it's the Frozen phenomenon and they're very, very separate. And again, similar to Moana and also Raya, although Raya has also started to kind of get included. But Merida was the last princess to be given a coronation at Walt Disney World.
So it's a phenomenon. It's an industrial phenomenon. It's a commercial phenomenon. Why else is it a phenomenon? And do you know what? It's quite hard to say the word phenomenon.
It really is. So I think it's also a phenomenon just because of how wide-reaching It is. You've got Disney princess representation for all kind of incomes across different classes, across different countries, and I think there's really something to be said about that. Obviously, I'm speaking from a UK experience. You can buy something that's got a Disney princess on it in Harrods, which is arguably one of the most expensive shops in the UK. But even, you know, the designers have collaborated with Disney on various things, including princess stuff. But I can also go into Poundland and there's Disney princess stuff there. So whilst, you know, the different products may differ, you can still access Disney princesses at varying price points and across varying countries.
It seems to be that the Disney princess, I'm now scared of saying the word phenomenon, so thank you, Alex, for that. It seems like the Disney princess phenomenon kind of crystallizes a lot of perhaps some of the scholarly debates around Disney's relationship to gender. So actually, again, these are a grouping of 10, a dozen princesses that bring together some of these strands that have developed certainly in the late 80s into the 90s and this emergence of kind of Disney studies. That Disney's perhaps it would be fair to say problematic relationship to gender and particularly their problematic relationship to depictions of femininity. So presumably that's your kind of also starting point, is that these kind of animated figures, these animated bodies are rife for thinking about, again, in your own work, kind of politicizing the animated body, thinking about gender, thinking about representation, and with that thinking about who's in a kind of politics of inclusion and exclusion, who's counted as a princess and who isn't. But it seems like these are these yeah the this Disney princess phenomenon really brings together a lot of the debates around Disney and femininity. So what are people saying about these figures?
Yeah, absolutely. So there have been a very various different kind of types of established ways of kind of approaching the Disney princesses, and you've got some people like Amy Davis and Tracey Mollett, who have really focused on films. You've also got some people like Rebecca Williams who have touched on princesses in theme parks. I'd say kind of like the main argument in the Disney princess arena, so to speak, is have these heroines progressed continuously or have they regressed? And that's kind of like that was the kind of really key argument that I found when I was writing my book. And I actually come at it from a bit of a different way in many ways. One, because there's a lot of literature on how the princesses are represented in films, and it can be quite hard to kind of encompass all of these, you know, women in one thing, right? A journal article only gives you X amount of number of words, so you can't always go into the depth that you want to. You might be only be able to focus on one film, or you might be able to only focus on one type of method or one aspect of the phenomenon. In other ways, they've been focused on in books where they've been able to go into more depth, but again, it might only be in the films, for example. And something that I really wanted to do was really kind of build on all of this fantastic work that's been done by all of these amazing scholars to kind of really try and encompass what these Disney princesses are as a phenomenon in the culture that we understand them in today. And I think to do that, it was really kind of about going, okay, well, the films are the starting point, but these aren't the only ways that consumers engage with Disney princesses. They're also engaging with them through merchandise. They're also engaging with them through consumer experiences like going to theme parks and physically going to meet these princesses. So I think as the scholarship around Disney Princess grows, we're also going to start to see more stuff done around fandom and more stuff done around fashion and all of these differing kind of facets that bring together the Disney princesses as a phenomenon rather than just a franchise.
I have a slightly impossible question with a minute and a half-ish left to go. Why or does it matter that they are princesses? Because I'm struck when I, you know, engage with this topic with people, there tends to be the dual phenomenon of princesses that are excluded, as well as the kind of murky world of Disney heroines that fit everything you've said that you'd find in Poundland, you'd find in the theme parks. Alice from Alice in Wonderland is a good example of this, right? Who aren't necessarily princesses. So I guess I'm assuming we're not just talking about heroines in Disney movies. There's something specific about the princess. And what is that specific thing that's worth interrogating?
Dress. Castle. Mostly romantic relationship, often like one or two dead parents. But specifically, I think I'm trying to do this very quickly as well, considering we've got very few seconds. But ultimately, it's about the princess culture. And I think princess culture, aside from Disney princesses themselves, is really inherent in girlhood. It's this concept of, I am a princess, I live in a castle, I have a dress, I have the shoes, I have the crown. And I think that's something that the Disney princesses really can kind of allow children and young people to really grasp onto, but also to provide some of those, you know, to provide morals and particular values that are then communicated through those films, which are often prioritized more. You would always see a Disney princess. You don't see Esmeralda anymore. You don't see Jane Porter anymore. You might see Alice in Wonderland, but again, that's a connection with Lewis Carroll and things like that. So the hold that they have is just quite phenomenal because of princess culture more widely.
Interesting, interesting. That's literally our 10 minutes. We'll give you just a second or two if you want. You've actually flagged up some really great scholarship as well. There's, of course, your book as well, Disney Phenomenon. Is there any other works out there you've not quite cited that you think people would go as a go-to to starting to unpick this this world?
Yes, absolutely. So Amy Davis, as I've already said, has written some great work on Disney princesses, as has Tracy Mollett. But we have also got a really fantastic journal article from England et al. It's from 2011 in Sex Roles, the journal, and it's called Gender Role Portrayal and the Disney Princesses. And that's actually a quantitative approach to coding and analyzing princess films from Snow White all the way up to The Princess and the Frog. And actually in many cases, to be able to fit that many films, especially more recent films, because there's less around kind of Princess and the Frog and Tangled and Frozen and things like that. More is coming, of course. And feel free to check out even just the bibliography of my book, because I have tried to get everybody in there that's ever written on princesses ever. So even if you just read the bibliography, I would definitely recommend that.
Terrific, terrific. Well, read more than the bibliography, listeners, but that's a good tip. That's a good tip. Great. Well, that's 10 minutes on Disney Princesses, expertly guided through. Thanks, Robin, again, for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Listeners, we'll see you for another footnote. If you have a suggestion for a future footnote, you can email us at fananimresearch, fananimresearch@gmail.com, and we're delighted to take them. Otherwise, we'll see you next time.
Bye.